This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's been a rough year for working people who lost their jobs, and it's been a year when the have-nots have had even less than they had before. A new study shows that many states tried to balance their budgets in 1991 by slashing programs that assist the poor. My guest is Robert Greenstein, director of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, which specializes in analyzing data and policy issues affecting low- and moderate-income Americans. This group, in conjunction with the Center for the Study of the States, released a report earlier today analyzing how poor people fared as the states desperately tried to balance their budget during this year's recession.
Well, one of the striking findings of the report is that different states that faced very large budget deficits took different courses. Some states largely or partially shielded the poor. Other states subjected the poor to deeper cuts than anybody else. The deepest cuts of any state in programs for the poor came in Michigan, but we identified eight states overall that were the deepest. Michigan at the deepest level, Massachusetts second deepest, but also California, Maryland, Ohio, Illinois, Maine, and the District of Columbia. All of these eight jurisdictions cut deeply into both cash assistance programs and other areas of support for the poor at the same time. One of the many of these states were characterized by simultaneously making deep cuts in cash assistance programs for people that don't get any other cash aid, that have no other income, and where these cuts would place them at some increased risk of homelessness, and then cutting programs to avert homelessness or to help the homeless at the same time. Several of these states also raised taxes more on the poor than on any other group at the same time that they were cutting fairly severely into their basic benefits.
Well, you say that Michigan had the worst cutbacks. Michigan ended general assistance.
Michigan did several things. Michigan terminated its general assistance program. This is a cash assistance program for indigent people who are not eligible for any other form of cash aid from any level of government, federal, state, or local. Michigan took more than 82,000 people who received cash aid from this program and simply terminated them. These are, by and large, people who have now no cash income at all. Michigan, at the same time that it terminated their cash assistance, terminated medical assistance, health care coverage for all 82,000 people at the same time. But that wasn't all that Michigan did. It cut AFDC benefits, that's the basic public assistance program for poor children and their families. It cut benefits in that program by more than an eighth. It also eliminated additional payments that used to go to pregnant women who were on AFDC, as well as additional payments to people facing high heating bills during the winter. And it took the state payment for the elderly and disabled poor that's a supplement to the federal basic benefit for the elderly and disabled poor. The federal benefit lives people below the poverty line, so over half of the states supplement it. Michigan took its state payment for the elderly and disabled poor, cut it more than 50%. It also terminated all state funding for the WIC program, the nutrition program for women, infants, and children that's been found to reduce infant mortality and low birth weight. Michigan also made substantial cuts in emergency assistance programs designed to reduce or avert homelessness and to help people avoid utility cutoffs or eviction. Now, Michigan did all of this at the same time that the unemployment rate in the state is 9%, there are several hundred thousand unemployed workers in the state, and the likelihood that people on these programs, who tend to be less educated and skilled, could find jobs when more skilled, formerly middle-class workers who've been laid off can't, is a fairly slim possibility.
Do you know what the rationale was for cutting back on welfare programs in Michigan to balance the budget?
Well, Michigan was one of the states, there were many this year, that faced very severe budget problems. Now, in Michigan, the governor is an extremely conservative governor, was adamantly opposed to any tax increase at all. There were some states that didn't raise taxes on middle-income people, but raised them some on the richest people in the state. Michigan did not raise taxes on anybody, and other large parts of the budget were put off limits from any cuts. And basically, these were proposals the governor made in the deepest cut, the termination of all aid for 82,000 indigent people. The governor argued throughout the year that these were people who were able-bodied, and they ought to be able to go to work. For those people, this is really all they could get. And the idea, again, that they would be likely to get jobs in a state with a 9% unemployment rate was pretty slim. But that is the major rationale the governor has used, that the state couldn't afford it, that these people were able-bodied, and they should just go out there and work.
So do you think that other states will be looking to the states who made the most drastic cuts, like Michigan, to see if they might do the same thing next year?
Yes, just in the, you know, one of the things that's happened is that states that thought they had balanced their budget for the 92 fiscal year, that year usually runs July 1 to June 30th, most of those states followed, to some degree, the projections that the Bush administration was putting out at that time, that within a few months the economy would be in a recovery. The economy is not in a recovery, and as a result of that, state revenue collections are lower than projected in many states because their economy is weaker than projected. This means that many states that thought they had balanced their budgets last summer now find they're not balanced after all. And in the past several weeks, Governor McKernan in Maine has proposed following Michigan's example and terminating general assistance there. Governor Schaefer in Maryland has proposed following a good way towards the Michigan example and terminating, throwing half the people on the general assistance program, terminating all benefits for them in Maryland. And in several other states, similar proposals are now being advanced.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Robert Greenstein. He directs the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, which specializes in analyzing data and policy issues affecting low and moderate income Americans. They've just released a study on how state budgets were balanced at the expense of the poor. Why are states being forced to take such draconian measures? What kind of economic issues are impacting on the state budgets now?
State budgets are in very tough shape, no question about it. They are in much tougher shape than they were even during the 81-82 recession. There are several reasons for this. First, there are two areas where state costs are rising rapidly. One is in the area of health care. As I'm sure most listeners know, health care costs are going through the roof. If you're a small employer, your premiums may be going up 20% per year. State governments face rapidly rising health care costs, both for Medicaid, in which states pay up to half of the cost. That's the health care program for poor families with children and for elderly and disabled poor people. They also face rising health care costs for health care premiums for state employees and for other health services the state helps support. Secondly, corrections costs, in other words, prisons. Prison costs are rising very rapidly in most states across the country as the number of people incarcerated continues to mount. In addition to that, school enrollments are now rising in many states. We went through a baby bust period, but now the birth rates are going back up some. So states are simultaneously facing large increased costs for health care and prisons, significant increased costs for education, at the same time that their revenues are not keeping pace, because in part because of the recession and in part because of state tax systems. Many state tax systems, most state tax systems, in fact, are somewhat archaic. They are somewhat archaic because many states rely very heavily on sales tax, and to a lesser degree on the income tax. And the sales tax is primarily a tax on goods, but our economy is increasingly an economy of services as well as goods, and most services aren't subject to the sales tax. That means that over time, a smaller proportion of state economic activity is subject to the sales tax, and the sales tax revenues don't rise along with the economy. So you have all of these things going on that are putting a crimp in state budgets.
What about the federal cutbacks of the early 1980s under President Reagan? How did those cutbacks end up affecting state budgets?
Well, a big part of the story is what the federal government did. In doing the study, in fact, we looked at federal grants to state and local government, other than grants that are really just entitlements passed through to individuals. When you look at federal grants to state and local governments, in fiscal year 91, they were 34% lower than in fiscal year 81. In other words, federal funding for state programs has been cut a third. That is a very large cut. When you talk of who got hit the hardest in the federal budget cuts of the 80s, and we often think of, well, you know, was it the unemployment program? Was it job training programs? If you think of it in terms of governmental entities, state and local governments were perhaps the entities hit harder than any other in our nation by those cuts. And so part of what happened was that benefits and services were already reduced, including benefits and services for the poor. And some state taxes were already raised as states attempted to fill the gap for some of the federal cuts. In 1990, the other shoe dropped. The economy stopped growing. Many of us believe that the recovery of the 80s was fueled in part by very large federal budget deficits anyway, and that it was something that couldn't last. The other shoe dropped. The economy sunk into recession. The federal money didn't come back, but states had trouble continuing to afford some of the steps they took to ameliorate the most severe aspects of the federal withdrawal. So that's part of the picture as well. If it's not a good time to be a governor or a state legislator, but I do think it's interesting that not all states cut programs for the poor this year. Some states that faced very deep deficits largely shielded the poorest people in our country. This really is a matter where states can make choices.
Do you think it necessarily follows that if general assistance programs are cut, that more people are going to end up living on the streets?
I do think that's likely. Most people on general assistance do not qualify for any other form of cash assistance from any level of government, federal, state, or local. Many of them have no other source of income. If they don't have a general assistance, they can't pay the rent. Many of those on general assistance actually already rent rooms for 2 or 3 weeks of the month and are homeless for the other week or two because their payment is so low, it doesn't cover the rent. So I'm not saying everyone who's cut off will end up on the streets, but I think it's likely a significant proportion will. And studies of past cuts in general assistance in states that have done these cuts before confirm that.
Let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. My guest is Robert Greenstein. He's the director of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. And they've just released a study analyzing how 50 states balance their budget for fiscal 92 by cutting programs for the poor. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Robert Greenstein, and he directs the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, which specializes in analyzing policy issues affecting low and moderate income Americans. I want to ask you a little bit more about what you think the motives are for states who are cutting programs that help the poor. Do you think that there's heartlessness behind it or just pure practical need to cut more money out of the budget and that's something that can be cut?
I think there's a lot of politics here. Cash aid programs for the poor, the programs that were cut most deeply this year, constitute only 5% of state budgets nationwide. If you take all cash assistance programs for the poor combined, I think there are only 4 states in the country where they constitute more than 6% of the budget. So states do have other options. However, many of the other options involve taking on powerful interest groups, and the people in these programs are the weakest political constituency in the country. They're not organized, they make no campaign contributions, and most of them don't vote. They are, in a tight budget time, the easiest people to cut.
Your report does praise some states for shielding the poor from budget cuts. Can you give us some example of a couple of states that you think shielded the poor?
Well, one example would be Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania faced a budget that was as large as a percentage of its deficit as many of the states that made the deepest cuts. Pennsylvania had a deficit equal to about a fifth of its budget. It really didn't cut any of the major programs for the poor. It actually expanded some of the health programs. For example, it increased state funding for the nutrition program for poor pregnant women, infants, and children. That's a program that reduces low birth weight and infant mortality. Pennsylvania, in raising taxes, did raise some taxes that are regressive. Regressive taxes take a larger percentage of income from the poor than from people at high income levels. But Pennsylvania accompanied that with some low income tax relief. Two other states that come to mind are Texas and Vermont. Now, Vermont did make some cuts in programs for the poor, but the New England states were in tough shape. And when you compare Vermont to Massachusetts and Maine, you see that Massachusetts and Maine made much more severe cuts in programs for the poor than Vermont did. Similarly, Texas had a large budget deficit. And while the taxes that it raised were regressive and hit the poor harder than other groups, it really shielded the basic assistance programs for the poor in a way that many northern states did not do.
If you were president, or if you were the governor of a large state, what are some of the things you would be recommending to balance state budgets?
Well, one of the things that I think I would do is I would look at both the spending side and the tax side. And on the tax side, I would particularly look at two areas. I would look at some increase in income taxes on the rich. There were five or six states, by and large states that did not do deep cuts in programs for the poor, that raised income taxes on people over $100,000 or $150,000 or in some cases $200,000 a year of income this year. I think that's something more states should look at. That group is the group that got the bulk of the gains in the American economy over the 80s, and they can afford a modest tax increase at a time that's very rough for other Americans. I would also look at tax loopholes. Most states still have a significant number of unproductive tax loopholes. Some of them are corporate tax loopholes. Some of them are upper income tax loopholes. And closing those is an alternative to look at.
Let me ask you, how much faith do you have right now in our elected leaders to turn around the economy?
Not a great deal. I think we do need to distinguish carefully between taking actions that help the economy to grow in the long run and taking action to pull ourselves out of the recession in the short run. When you have a $350 billion deficit as a result of a decade of fiscal mismanagement, it limits your options on what you can do to lift the economy out of recession in the short run. I mean, I would favor not only shifting money from defense to domestic, but doing it in a way where over a five-year period, every dollar you have put in domestic is paid for by a dollar taken out of defense. But I wouldn't pay for it year by year. I'd put more into domestic than I was taking out of defense right now to stimulate the economy. And 3 years from now, I would do it the reverse. I would have more coming out of defense than going into domestic. So I got deficit reduction by 3 years from now when the economy should be stronger. But I fear that what the Congress and the president are going to do instead is a new raft of tax loopholes and upper income tax breaks. All the signals here in Washington are that we're going to get a bidding war on a new round of tax cuts, not dissimilar from those we got in 81, that these will be tax cuts, that a series of gimmicks will be used to make it look like they pay for themselves, but that in the long run, increase the deficit and dig the economy into a deeper hole, and that confer larger benefits on the wealthy through a new set of loopholes that are presented as promoting growth, but where most economists think they don't promote growth, like capital gains cuts, individual retirement accounts, real estate tax shelters, and the like, that's not where the money should be going. So I am pessimistic about what the federal government will do. My fear is the federal government will make things worse rather than better. I sincerely hope I am wrong on that score.
If you could make one recommendation to Congress, what would it be?
I think my recommendation to Congress would be to fully pay for any middle income tax cut through upper income tax increases and to take defense savings, make as significant savings in defense as we can, consistent with national security, and invest those in rebuilding our economy and our country.
Robert Greenstein, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Robert Greenstein directs the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities in Washington, D.C. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.